This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. The Republicans are abysmal replacement, the American Health Care Act. Much of the talk surrounding its impact focuses on insurance numbers and premium hikes. Those things are certainly important, but this is more important. The Republican plan caused unnecessary suffering and preventable death.
We'll discuss how we know this and how our great victory at defeating Trump Care opens the opportunity for the American public to seize the time for health care for all with a single-payer system, Medicare for all.
And now we speak with Dr. Donald Moore, Physicians for a National Health Program, New York Metro Chapter, and MD-MPH, and Deborah Berger, co-president of National Nurses United and registered nurse. I want to begin with... Well, the National Budget Office told us there were numbers about maybe 24 million people who would not be receiving health care benefits, insurance coverage under the Trump Care plan. But how do we really know?
You've underscored the most important point, that based on the new health care bill, the American Health Care Act, forward by the Republicans, it's estimated by the federal government that some 14 million people are going to not have health insurance who would have had it under the current law. So about 14 million people in 2018. And if we go a little bit further to 2020, the number goes up to 21 million and up to 24 million by the next decade. So clearly this bill, we're likely to see less insured, which means the concept of universal insurance, which we were hoping we would be achieving within the next decade or so, less likely to occur. Universal insurance, which means everybody in the country has health insurance.
I'd like to add that we know that millions left out of the Republican health care plan because even under the Affordable Care Act, there are millions of people already without insurance, and that plan was supposed to have made things better for people, which it did, but it still left people uninsured. And the proposals to transfer the responsibility of providing Medicare to the states via block grants to make it even worse, because state budgets are already strained. They aren't going to make up the gaps in health care that the federal government did under the Affordable Care Act.
Who's the ones that are left out of this?
It's the poor people in the country. I think there was a very cynical look at how they tailor health care and the restructuring, and they figured that the poorest in our community, including children, minors, generally as a block, people that don't vote are the most affected. They're concerned about retaliation in the voting booth, but they don't seem to be as concerned about people of color, very frail, elderly, and the extremely poor in this country.
Donald, about half of the people losing health care will be Medicaid recipients, and a large number also poor people between the ages of 50 and 65. We talked a bit about Medicaid. If you want to add something to that, fine. But what about this other group from 50 to 65?
You're absolutely correct. With the American Health Care Act, we're now just shifting where the benefits went, moving away from the poor, which were the Medicaid eligible and people up to 400% of the poverty level who could get subsidies, eventually going away. Also, a very important group, which I think neither one of the health reform plans really adequately addressed, was the people who are not yet at Medicare, but are high risk for chronic diseases. We're talking about people between, say, 50 years old and, say, 64 years old. 65 is when we are eligible for Medicare. But we have people who have very, very large health needs, not have access to insurance unless they're employed by a large employer such as the government or a large employer that gives health insurance. The premiums for that elderly non-Medicare group to actually go up. The Affordable Care Act limited how the insurances could be sold to the various ages. Now, it's normal for insurance companies to charge different premium rates to different groups based on their expectation of use of whatever product they're selling. So if you have a young person in their early 20s who is not likely to become ill compared to somebody in their 50s who is a lot more likely to become ill, then it's reasonable for an insurance company to charge a lower rate for the younger person and a higher rate for the older person. However, because most of us believe healthcare is a right and we should all have access to it, the insurance companies and governments do what's called community rating. They put everybody in the same pool, spread the risk across so that no one is hit with a very high rate. So with the American Healthcare Act, some unraveling of that, which was addressed to some extent under the ACA, the Affordable Care Act.
One of the other proposals, really onerous, a work requirement in the Medicaid block grant so that if you're eligible for Medicaid, that you somehow have to try to have employment, which belies the fact that a lot of the people that are on Medicaid are children, also disabled, and can't get a job in order to satisfy that requirement. So it's pretty deadly no matter how you look at it when you're looking at whether the issue of saying that you have to maintain your coverage without a gap or they can charge you three times the premium. There is so much bad with this.
And I want both of you to further punctuate the issue of race and class here. Who are the losers? To what degree can we say that there really is a disparate impact for poor people and a disparate impact for people of color, immigrants who are quote unquote legal in this society, etc.? How does Trump care affect those particular groups and that class of people?
If you're 0.1 of the 1%, extremely well under this, because this is the largest transfer of public wealth to individuals in a class that already is doing extremely well and has done well over this last decade, even during the Great Recession. What isn't really being talked about a lot, they have us looking at all of these headlines about Russia and about spying and things like that, however, impact those people that most need health care in this country. And it worries me because even our Democratic politicians in Washington aren't willing to stand up and say that this is a huge tax giveaway package. It has almost nothing to do with health care when you look at the huge tax breaks that the wealthy are going to get.
This is Donald Moore. The obvious loser is basically poor people, people who benefited when the Affordable Care Act expanded Medicaid. If you were in a state where Medicaid was expanded 138% of the poverty level, then you would definitely benefit. However, neither of these laws really address the issue of health care for the American public. As was pointed out by my colleague, the Affordable Care Act left certainly up to 30 million Americans uninsured, and another 31 million who were underinsured. Underinsured basically means that you're still not getting health care, even though you have an insurance card in your pocket, because your deductible is too high, your copayment is too high, or you know very well that the health care that I'm going to access is not going to be useful to me. So there's an attitudinal underinsurance. Just, you know, I have a lousy insurance. The doctors in my network or the hospital in my network is not really what I want. And of course, there is a structural underinsurance, which combines those two factors. So we really never did get close to universal health care. The problem is, though, that despite all of that, the American people are spending even more money on health care. Imagine when the Affordable Care Act was passed, we were sent to a website to buy insurance from basically private insurance companies. Now, here it is. This was our fund, government fund, that was being transferred to private insurance companies, who were then giving us products that we couldn't use. Now, let me give you an example. I had insurance last year. I had what the Republicans are now promoting as a HSA, health savings account. The way that works is you put your own money aside to pay the doctor, to pay for your drugs, and then you buy a catastrophic insurance. The first year that I had this insurance, I needed health care. Between my wife and I, we spent $6,000. And we spent another $12,000 on the premium. So after I spent all that money, I now finally could use the insurance. Well, what did the insurance company do? They dropped me because I used the insurance. So I spent almost $15,000 up front for health care and then ended up with no health care because I was not dealing with a government who basically was going to guarantee my rights. I was dealing with a private profit company. So that's the kind of health care that we have. Now, I say this to point out that these solutions that we're being offered are inadequate. They don't work. Obamacare didn't work for me. Trump Care will definitely not work for me, not as a doctor, not as a taxpayer, and certainly not as one consumer of healthcare. What really would work for me is a system where I was guaranteed to have healthcare from the day I was born. Whether I was working or not, I would have health insurance that would give me access to healthcare. And when I did make this access, whether it's through seeing a physician or going to a hospital, I would not have to take so much money out of my pocket that I would have second thoughts on whether I would want to have that care. Basically, what we're talking about is a system that's universal and a system that eliminates the commercial payers.
Deborah, why don't you follow through on that and talk about the system that both Donald's organization, the Physicians for National Health Care, and your union, the National Nurses United, wants, and that is the Medicare for All, or single-payer system.
There's no reason for me to believe that we can't fight Trump Care, the big giveaway to the insurance industry, and advocate and fight for single-payer system. We've helped many states that have been trying to get single-payer enacted. The last time was Colorado Care, which drew millions and millions of dollars from the healthcare industry to fight against it. But here in California, we're going down the legislative angle again. We have Senator Ricardo Lara, who is going to sponsor SB 562, and it's called the California Health and Care Act. And you can find the details on our website through calnurses.org. Essentially, it would finance the Healthy California through a number of mechanisms. One is a payroll and income tax premium, which is higher for upper income earners, so it is progressive. And it would replace the insurance premiums, copays, and deductibles most people are already paying. You would be able to choose any provider. If you wanted Kaiser to provide your care, they would still be part of that system, but there would be no out-of-pocket expenses. It would eliminate copays for Medicare Part D because we would take over administering Medicare and Medicaid to the states. We would take that money and include them also in this Affordable Care Act. It would also include vision, dental, because nurses know that you can't just say healthcare without affecting some other parts of the body that have specific territory carved around them that need to be dealt with. We would have regional planning to avoid duplication of expensive equipment and facilities. There are a number of things that we learned from the Affordable Care Act that would be folded into the new system, like pre-existing conditions, and you wouldn't have to worry about kids over 26 being covered because they would be covered. But it would also save because of a reduced bureaucracy. We wouldn't have to worry about insurance company run around. There'd be no more bill collectors. And I'm sure the doctor would testify that when you're running a doctor's office, half of your staff that are there are used for getting their money back from the insurance companies. So it's a bill that we think has a good deal of likelihood passing. We've made it what's called a two-year bill because we think that that gives us time to educate the public on their options and also to find out exactly what's going to happen with the healthcare, quote, reform in Washington, D.C.
And Donald, New York State has a similar bill, so do you want to talk about that?
Yes, absolutely. The New York health bill is quite similar to the bill in California. And Debbie will probably tell you that that bill in California got through both houses and then was vetoed by the governor at the time, Schwarzenegger. Hopefully, we don't have that similar fate in New York. As you know, in New York, the New York Health Act passed the assembly multiple times. As a matter of fact, it's a very popular bill. It passed the assembly by a very large margin, and it's just a few more senators in New York that need to come on board. And, of course, hopefully the governor will sign it. What these state plans do is they're an intermediate step to a national health program. The Physicians for a National Health Program is an organization that's been around since the late 70s, and healthcare reform in America has been a long road. This goes back well over 100 years. We've been trying to figure out how to provide health to the population through insuring the population. So health insurance is not new. The question was asked earlier, you know, can we make sure that we don't take the step backwards and move back to the so-called Trump care from Obamacare, and at the same time move to something progressive such as a single-payer universal health plan for all Americans? And the answer is definitely yes. You know, I can also certainly walk and chew gum. More importantly, it would be inappropriate to stop at Obamacare. You know, there's what's known as sort of past dependence. Last battle is what sets up the next fight. And, you know, Obamacare was the last battle, and we ended up there because there were many battles before. As many of you will remember, the Clintons had a health plan, Senator Kennedy had a health plan, and as we go back, Truman had a health plan. As a matter of fact, they thought President Truman was trying to put socialized medicine in the American health population. But we go way back with these plans. There is nothing really new that I certainly have heard about health care or any health program. Most of what you see being implemented, whether it's the Affordable Care Act or the American Health Care Act, these are programs that have been introduced many, many years ago. It's just a matter of the political will to make sure that we move in the right direction and continue to move in the right direction. Many feel that, okay, maybe too big a step to jump to a single payer. I certainly think that it's not too big a step. But the fact is, we don't want to go backwards. We don't want to disenfranchise and certainly take away the health care from people who already have it. What we want to do is we want to move towards universal health insurance, 100% of the population being insured. Because when we're not insured, it's not only our health that's at risk. Our entire financial well-being is at risk. 62% of bankruptcies in the United States result from health expenses. People who, when they got an illness, generally a catastrophic illness, they have health care. They have some kind of health insurance. But because many of us get our health care from our employer, when you get sick, you no longer are able to work. Once you stop working, you lose your insurance. When you lose your insurance and you can't pay for your health care, you get sick or you can't work, then what do you lose next? You lose your house, you lose your car, and then you're in debt. You go bankrupt. So that's what happened to a majority of people who got into bankruptcy. It resulted from health care. So there is financial security in health insurance. It's not just access to health care. The Affordable Care Act, this discussion we're having over and over that mobilizes so many people and so many Americans against each other. Only a quarter of that bill deals with access to care. The majority of the Affordable Care Act really deals with things that we're not even discussing about our health care delivery system. It deals with things like the training of nurses, the training of doctors, access to, there was a part of it that gave us access to long-term care. So there's a lot that we'll have to fix in our health care delivery system. But what our discussion tonight is really about is really access to health care through health insurance. And the only reasonable solution for Americans is really a single payer. And what is single payer versus a multi-payer? A single payer is the least expensive path. With multiple insurance companies, we have to give profits to multiple insurance companies. With multiple insurance companies, we have to set up administrative structures for each one. As a physician, if I'm dealing with 20 insurance companies, my staff needs to know 20 different rules. They need to fill out 20 different forms or have 20 different forms available. That's very costly. If there was one, it would be simple. I would know the rules. Everybody would know the rules. We would all have access to all the providers. The way it is right now, we're in different silos. If you're in my network, then you can go to my hospital and you can see my colleagues who are in the network. If you go out of network, you're going to be punished. You're going to have to either pay your own way or you're going to have to pay extra. So the system we have, this multi-payer system, is inefficient and it actually creates less access to the physician or the provider that you would like to see.
And we're almost out of time, but I want to give Deborah Berger the last opportunity in the last 2 minutes to pick up on what Dr. Donald Moore was saying and how are the nurses and we to organize to defeat Trump care and to bring to our public health care for all, a universal system, removing the insurance companies from the process, a system of Medicare for all. Deborah Berger?
What we really have to understand when we're talking to all of our fellow colleagues, our nurses, and everyone, is that in addition to all of the tax credits and things that are being used to either support this or not, there's also roughly about $4 billion of annual transfers of funds from state and federal treasuries to our insurers to provide coverage for people that are employed, because businesses do get to deduct the cost of health care as a business deduction. That is a pool of money that could also be used to fund health care. The money is there, and the nurses are busy in various states working to lobby legislators to take another look at single payer. It's no accident that both in Canada and other countries, if you look at how they supply care to the 13 high-income nations, Sweden, Switzerland, Germany, Canada, Australia, all spend far less total than we do, and they have better outcomes for infant mortality. They have the best life expectancy and quality of life. And what we need to do is actually not only talk to people that are our normal allies, but to reach people that don't normally fall into our sphere of influence. And I think that's where the nurse's strength is, because we're used to talking with people that normally aren't in our social group to get them to understand what's at stake. And we do have a lot of literature that we're going to be producing. So if you go to National Nurses United, you'll see information there, as well as the California Nurses Association, on not only SB 562, but trying to get through the legislature nationally to get the information out there. We're doing another People's Summit in June where healthcare will be one of the issues that's being discussed. We plan on making sure that we educate everyone on where the money is and how much our priorities need to change in order to accomplish single payer.
Deborah Berger, co-president of National Nurses United and registered nurse. Dr. Donald Moore, past president of the Medical Society of the County of Kings, Physicians for a National Healthcare Program, New York Metro Chapter, and MD, MPH. Thanks for the introduction to this discussion that Ken and I are going to be following through on consistently until we have a universal healthcare system. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.